I welcome you to episode 2, The Morshalls in Pestles Lane, Maru Meadow. Great-grandfather Johann Morshall and his wife Marie Caroline migrated from Germany to Australia in 1855 with two sons. He had signed a contract with de Maistre's agent in Germany prior to migrating. Johann had served in the Prussian army. Johann worked at Etienne de Maistre's estate at Tarara, a horse stud and dairy farm. De Maistre paid for his fare. He was to work as a farmhand, gardener. His wife Marie Caroline worked as a milkmaid for 2 years. They received full board and lodgings, plus £35 sterling. They would assign two more agreements over a three-year period and remained at Tarara. Their annual sum increased to £50 sterling. The de Maistre family owned land at Tarara where they had stables, farms and a vineyard. In fact, Archer, who won the Melbourne Cup, was trained at de Maistre stud in Tarara. Their home was called Millbank House, which is opposite Tarara School. They stayed until after 1869. Then Johann became a tenant farmer at Maru Meadow on the Berry Estate. When the estate sold off the land in 1893, Johann purchased the land he had been working with his two sons on the western side of the highway, now known as Boxall's Lane. He had worked as a builder and plasterer. They later bought land on the eastern side of the highway. Their eldest son, Henry Edward, born 1849, had purchased 60 acres of land at Bowlong in 1885. He moved to Lismore in 1915 and passed away in 1927. Sadly, Marie was to carry three children between 1851 and 53, all dying. Jacob Morshall was also on the ship from Germany, a baby, and the second eldest living son. He was born in 1854 in Hesse, Germany. He eventually married Christine Muller in 1879 at Maru Union Church, a non-denominational church for Protestants. John Morshall was the next surviving child, born in 1856 at the David Berry Hospital. They were all living at Tarara. He married Frances Purdy on the 29th of May, 1895, at St. John's Church of England in Nowra. A further seven children were born after John. Two were to die shortly after birth, so a remaining five survived. George, born in 1857, Elizabeth, born in 1863, Augustus, born in 1865, and Catherine, born in 1866. The family were close-knit and highly regarded in the community. John Morshall bought his own land on the flats just beside the railway line at Maru. Morshall's Lane is named after the family where John and his sons farmed. Jacob remained on the western side of the highway. His grandson David today reflects on his father, grandfather and family dairy operations in Pestles Lane, where David still farms today. He originally grew up in the family home in Boxall's Lane, then moved to Pestles Lane from age 9. David has lived most of his life in isolation, some would say as a hermit, in Pestles Lane. I'm lucky to have secured him for this project. I'm pleased to introduce to you David Morshall. David, thanks for coming in today. Where were you born and what year were you born?
I was born in Nowra at the private hospital in Ridge Road, the Edmund I think it was called, on the 29th of January 1947.
Do you have siblings?
Yes, I have a sister. She's older than me. She was also born there in August 45. And I've got a half-brother. He was born in Nowra, I presume.
What's your sister's name, full name?
Anne Leslie, and Smith now. She's married, so.
And your full name is
David Oswald Marshall, yeah.
What about your half-brother?
He was Irvine Gordon Marshall, and he passed away 2006. He was born in 1933, 21st of March, I think. Dad was born in Maru on their property up in Boxall's Lane on the 22nd of November 1896. Mum was born at Corowa, down on the Murray River, on the 3rd of March 1910.
And you say the property in Boxall's, so just be specific there. So
they had a property that fronted, it went from, I'll say, from the highway to Pestle Lane. 56 acres they had there eventually. They started up with 28 and then they got up to 56, got some more. And then in around 1920, something, I don't know exactly when, that's when they built the house near the opposite the church. Before that, they were up on the hill.
So you're saying opposite the church. Couldn't you name that church?
Maru Union Church.
So when you say the house opposite...
Yeah, it's in Boxall's Lane on the corner.
Does that house still exist?
Yeah.
You turn into Boxall's.
Yeah, you turn into Boxall's and it's the first one on the left. So it would be number one, possibly.
Is it the old post office?
Yes.
Tell me about the old post office and your history relating to that.
Well, they had the post office when they were up at the other end of, on the other end of the property, up near Tullian Creek. They had the post office there. I don't know when they got it. They come to Maru, grandfather, and they come to Maru in around 1893. I think they had the post office nearly from then, and then the people down Maru Road, they got a petition together and got it moved down to Maru in Maru Road. It was too far to come up there for their mail, and there wasn't as many down there apparently as there was up, because the ones from right up in Bell's Lane, they used to come down there and get their mail. And the school kids used to get the mail and take it home with them.
And Bell's Lane's a bit further up.
Yeah, you get into that off Mossvale Road. It was only down there for about 6 weeks, I think. And the other one, they got a petition up and got it back again. And the Marshalls had it from then. But I don't know just when the telephones come through. But they had that as well.
So you're saying the telephone exchange?
Yeah, the post office on that. There, the church, and then the school. Well, there used to be a Maru Hall down. It was opposite school. And that disappeared when they did the highway about 50 years ago. In Marshall's Lane, they were grandfather's brother. That was John.
When you say grandfather, what was your grandfather's name?
Jacob.
And he migrated when?
He came out, and he was 1 year old when they got to Australia in 1854. And John, he was the first one born in Australia in 1856. But I don't... Well, there was Jacob, John, Gus, Powell, Elizabeth, and there was two others, girls, I think. One died when she was fairly young. And there was Heinrich too. He was the eldest. He was born in Germany too. Like his father and John and Gus and Powell and Elizabeth. So,
so your grandfather was the Marshall Lane brother?
Yeah, brother of the Marshall Lane. Always, our family were always in Boxall Lane and Pestle and Jacob. When he came back, I'll tell you a little bit more. When he got married, he went to Cambawara. He was up there the first four children were born up there. Then he went to Back Forest, and there was another five born there. And then he came to Maru, and the last four were born in Maru, in the old slab house up near on the hill near Tullian Creek.
Did you ever see that house?
No, that was gone before my time.
Quite common, weren't they, slab houses? Yeah. Must have been hard.
Well, there is still one in Maru.
And where is that?
It's up, well, it's on up there in Vauxhall Lane, up the other way. People still live in it, but people don't know it's a slab house. People that owned it in the early 50s, they covered it with fibro. And that's where he used to live.
Okay, so we've got this picture here, and you're saying this is Johann Morschel.
Yeah.
And who is he again to you?
He's my great-grandfather.
His daughter Elizabeth painted that. Can you tell me more about that painting? Have you seen the painting?
No.
Do you know where it is?
No.
Did you ever go over to Morschel's Lane as a young boy?
I only ever went there twice, and I was about 20 or 20, maybe early 20s when I went there.
And describe the landscape over there and who was living there.
When I went there, there was only Len. He was the third son, I think, of John. Him and George, who was the youngest. They were two bachelors, and I went down to get some succulent seed from them. That's why I was there. But I only saw George. I never ever saw Len. Well, in that family, I only knew three of them. I only ever met, there was three girls and four boys. Clive, Len, Mark and George were the boys. Florrie, Lily and Reen.
Were the girls?
Were the girls.
Nice names.
Yeah.
Big families.
Yeah. There was another one that died when he was only young, I think. But I don't really know them, but I only knew Clive and Florrie and George. They're the only ones I knew.
Did you go to school with any of them?
I went with Clive's daughter. She's the same age as me.
What was her name?
Frances.
She's still alive?
Yeah, Frances Buckham now. And a bit sad, her husband died here just recently. Fell through the roof, and sad it was. Her brother, Mark, he lives up, their property joins ours. He's up near the Bell's Lane. I see him occasionally.
So thinking of Morschel's Lane, what did it look like and what were they farming there?
They had a dairy. They had a fair bit of land, hundreds of acres. And actually, the lane was part of their property. There was a bit of a kerfuffle over that when they were naming it. The council were going to name it something else.
Tell me more about that.
I don't know. It was Warner's Lane or something like that they were going to do it. And this is back in the 1990s, sometime then. And anyway, Albert Muller, he got a petition up and got it named Morschel's Lane because it was on their property. How far back it was, but they used to go down Lamon's Lane. That's the one opposite Oxford's Lane. They used to go down there. And the bridge washed out in the creek and they couldn't get out. So they had the property that come up onto the highway there opposite Devitt's Lane. So they made their own road through their own property. And that's why Albert, he remembered, he came around, he told Mum, I remember when they did it.
When was that?
It was, I don't know, just when that bridge washed out. I don't know. You know, you've named it Morschel's Lane.
So Shoalhaven Council, did they have to support that?
Well, they were the ones who were going to call it something else. But one of the other members of the Morschel family, descendants, Reen's descendants, they used to live down Lamon's Lane, and they tried to get it named Morschel's Lane. The council wouldn't hear of it. Now, but he had a bit more clout, apparently.
So they were dairy farming?
Yes, they were dairy farming in a small way. They never put in milking machines. They always milked by hand right up till 1972, that's when Len passed away, and I think it was 72, and George, he got out of dairy in about 2 weeks after that, he gave it away.
Tell me about what sort of cows they were milking and...
I don't know what breed of cows they had, I don't really know very much about them, actually, because I've only was down there that
getting seed.
Yeah, getting that seed that time.
So they had a lot of land. They must have been growing grasses or...
Well, they would have farmed like the other farms. They had their pasture, and they grew corn and saccharin for feed in the winter. I know they grew the saccharin because that's how they got the seed. But they had corn. Would have grown corn and saccharin because that's back in those days. That was how they did it.
Tell me the migration story of the Germans coming out here and where they migrated to initially and how you all spread.
They came to Australia in 1854 and landed in Melbourne, but then they came up, I don't know how they got from Melbourne to up here, because it was, well, my sister got it up on the computer, that Joanna's wife, Maria, she was that sick when they arrived in Melbourne, they carried her off the boat. They come up and they worked for Domesta, and then they come up to Maru, and I reckon sometime in the 1870s, and lived in that slab house. And then the grandfather, he stayed around the district, and John was actually a builder at one time. He helped build the Maru church. And the groom, he worked for that builder.
Maru, and you're about to name the other church?
Greenville Point Church, because it's the same as Maru Church. Barry gave him the money for it. Heinrich, I don't know, we didn't sort of know much about him, but he's up, went up the north coast. And Gus and Powell and their families, they were around the district for a while. Gus owned a piece of ground up the end of Devitt's Lane. And Powell, that's not his right name, I don't think. But anyway, he owned a bit down in Maru Road and Bomaderry where the bowling club, and along there, along that strip of land in there, I don't know how much, but they left here and went to Port Kembla, and their sons were divers, that like inspecting boats and that sort of thing, I think. And a few of them, there was four marshals went to the First World War. Two of them come back, and one of them I know was Heinrichs, and the other one of them was named George Austin, and that's where that George got. He was killed, and George was born not long after that, and that's where he got his name. He was over in Gallipoli. He's one of Heinrichs. He got killed in Gallipoli. Dad never mentioned him, and Elizabeth, she married a policeman, and she had a soup kitchen, and he was a policeman.
So here you are, your family are farming in Boxalls Lane.
Yeah.
What are they farming?
Well, Jacob had 56 acres, and he also he was a bootmaker, and they had the post office. But when Dad left school when he was 13, he worked on the farm, dairying. Yeah, he went to Maru School. That's when he went, I think. All the ones that were still school age, they would have went there. That would have been Ada and... Joe didn't. He was the youngest son. He didn't. He was living in Canberra with his elder sister.
So where are we here? In the early 20th century or...?
Yeah, in the early 1900s. You see, Dad would have left school about 1909, 1910.
What sort of cows have you got there?
Well, I don't know what sort of cows they had, probably a mixture of cows, because Dad always had a mixture of crossbred cows.
Did he have a lot of them? Or?
No, probably only, well, I think he said in 1928, when they had a big drought, they were milking 12 cows, and that's about all they ever milked. And he would have been doing his building, and he used to go out. Well, him and Joe, I just don't know when they started it, doing it, because Joe was a qualified builder. And they used to go, they built two houses and sheds and things like that for people. And one house they built, I don't know whether it's still there or not, it was in Maru Road, the first house. When you turned off the highway into Maru Road, they built that in 1930, and they built one in Turner's Lane at Jasper's Brush. They pulled that down in West Campbell Warren, brought it to Maru and rebuilt it. I know that one's still there.
What is your first memories of the dairy farm as a young boy in the 50s?
That's when he was share farming then for Joe Pestel. And that property joined onto their original property, was next door to it.
How big was that property?
There was 75 acres. It went from the highway back onto Pestel's Lane, just a strip through there. And they also had a 60-acre paddock up at the foothills of Campbell Warren Mountain, down south of the lookout in there. Well, they used to just run the dry cows and the heifers and that up there. But I don't know, Dad told me once the wind blew a big tree over up one of the gullies, and he went up there and sawed it into things, split the fence posts out, and couldn't even get up there with the horses. He carried all the things out of his back.
He would have had the axe then, would he?
Yeah.
No machinery?
Yeah. The axe, the old cross-cut saw, the maul, the wedges and all that stuff.
And he had to cart that up there?
Yeah, he carried it in and then carried the posts out.
How big was your dad?
He was only about 5'6", weighed about 9 stone. Well, Mum said that when she met him in the mid-40s. He only weighed 9 stone. He had horses when I was young and did all the stuff and all the hard yakking, digging post holes. And
talk a bit more about that.
What I can remember, they had those... He had the milking machines. I don't remember before that. He was probably one of the first ones to get, because he put the milking machines in 1939, and that was before the electricity comes through. They should drive them with an engine. That they used to fill those concrete silos with corn, and that was all cut by hand and carted in and put through the chaff cutter and that. I remember them doing that.
So they're still using slides?
Yeah, horse and slide.
Did you ever get in the silos yourself to jump around and get the air out?
Only when we're up to the first window. We weren't allowed up.
How many windows were there?
There was about 4, I think. But Mum went right to the top. I remember it was after me, Irvie left us, we call Irvine, Irvie, when he, because things went bad on the farm back in the mid-50s, and he had to go out to work. And they got a bloke in one year, I think it was the last year they filled the silo, to help do the silo, because it used to take them about 6 weeks to do it. And anyway, he was there, and he went off one Saturday at lunchtime, never come back. So Mum had to help do it.
So the silo, explain the operation. So the silo's there, with the feed stalls nearby.
Well, actually, on that property, there was 2 silos, and then they had the feed stall sort of next to it. Spent 6 weeks filling it up, and then that was for later in the winter, because they did it around this time of the year, they'd be filling it. And they also had the saccharine, and they used to bring that in and chaff that and feed that in. I think I fed that in the stalls first, and then the corn later, if I remember rightly.
Did you have the trolley going down the stalls or hand?
No, some people did, but Dad always bagged it. He'd put it into bags. So I don't think Anne and me actually helped him bag the silage when he got it out. They just had a big, like a window on it, and then had a bag chute, and they used to just come down and hook the bags on the bottom. But if you had a trolley, well, that'd just sit into the trolley and... But for some reason, he always did it in bags, and when he chaffed the green corn or the saccharine, he had a double bagger, and it just went up the elevator and back down, free fell back down into the bags. And we used to help do that when I was, must have been 8 years old, because we left over there when I was 9. So we used to help do that. We used to fill the bags, kick the bags.
Do you remember any rodents? How did you keep the rats away from stuff?
I don't remember many rats over there, actually, because we always had cats.
Well, it's a drier part, isn't it, that side? It's not the wet part of the... It's not the Shoalhaven part, it's the escarpment part.
We didn't... There used to be... There'd be rats there, but not great plagues of them, because we always had a lot of cats. And we've still got a lot of cats.
What do you feel about cats?
Well, they're there. They're not pets. They're just there.
They've got a job to do.
Yeah. Like the accountant's wife said, we're talking about it. She said, they're working cats.
I like that. Do you feed them or do they feed themselves?
No, I feed them.
What do you feed them?
Well, at the moment I'm feeding them powdered milk and bread and calf pellets. And the little kittens. I've got four little kittens there at the moment. I take them over a bit of porridge.
It's very sweet.
Yeah. We always had a mixed herd of cattle, dairy. And on the share farm, they milked around 40-odd on there. And it was because it was a share, you only had to milk a fair few because the boss had to get his share out of it.
How does a share farm work?
Well, that was a half share. There's different ways of doing it. That, as far as I can understand, that was a half share. The boss supplied the property and the cattle and Dad did the work and there was bits and little bits and pieces in it, who paid for this and who paid for that, but I just don't know how that really, that bit of it, but the main gist of it was Joe Pestle, that was one, he supplied the property and the cattle, and when Dad first went there, he supplied the horses, the two old horses, and then later on when they bought the tractor, Dad had to pay for half the tractor.
Is that the name of the lane?
Yeah, that's where it come from, because Joe was on that side, you've come up Pestle's Lane, up from the highway, up where that overpass thing is, you come up there, he was on the right-hand side, Tom was on the left-hand side, where we are now, and Tom was married to Dad's sister, and that's how we got the property.
Who did Tom Pestle marry?
Minnie Marshall, Dad's second eldest sister. And Tom Pestle, he was a Boer War veteran. He went to the Boer War. And also his brother Dick, who used to be a policeman, he went to the Boer War as well. So I found out, honey, found that out just recently.
So do you think it might have been named because they were servicemen?
No, just because they lived there. That's how they named it, like Boxall used to. Well, according to what Dad told me, where the Boxall's Lane is, that wasn't always Boxall's Lane. That had a different name. Boxall's Lane was the one that went, that's Elliot's Lane now. And Graham's Road, well, Graham's lived up there, where Richard Boxall is. They lived up there since the year Dot, I think.
Yes, I've seen that on the original map. They had quite a bit of land up there.
Yeah. Well, we got an old photocopy of an old map, 1836, and it's got Mrs. E. Graham on it. Another little bit of information about the
Yes,
people.
Please.
They used to live up in West Cambawara before they... John Pestle, that's Joe and Tom's father, because he had the property that Dad used to share farm on, Joe's property. He used to live there, and... They used to live up in West Cambawara, and there was a film made on that property in 1968, Adam's Woman, and that's the property that used to be Pestle's property. Limry's owned it.
How did you get on with the Pestles?
Well, I only knew Joe, got on all right with him. He used to live next to Marie, when he retired, when he got off the farm in 1925. He lived in that house that's next to Maru School, that white house that Duncan's own now.
So you'd go and visit him, would you?
Odd times. He used to come out to the farm nearly every day. He'd also go and see Minnie, because Tom had died. He died in 1940, so he used to go over and see Minnie because that was his brother's widow.
Did they have children, Tom and Minnie?
No, they didn't have any. Joe had one daughter, and she lived in Sydney.
What was her name?
Molly. Actually, her name was Margaret Mary, I think. My sister found it. It was known as Molly. She was married to Rob Wilson, and they had two daughters, Margaret and Patricia. Sort of knew them because they went to private school, the Presbyterian Ladies College, because that's where Molly went. They used to come down to see their grandparents a week earlier than when we were still going to school, because they went to a private school. They'd come down to the school to fill in their time. And you might be there in the morning, and then later on they'd go away. But
So tell me about some of your school friends. Can you remember who taught when you went to school?
There was one teacher there, C.J. Debenham. He was the main teacher, but when I was in second class, we had a lady teacher, and she only had the kindergarten, first and second class. That was Miss Walsh, and she belonged to the parents used to be out in what's Jasper's Brush Road now. They used to live out there. She was only there for that 1 year. So that was in 1954 she was there. There was only the one teacher again, C.J. Debenham. Well, they said he was there for 24 years, and he was finished up in 1960, so he must have been there in 1936, he must have come there. Well, there was only 24 kids there altogether, so...
Who were the families?
Yeah, there was, of course, John Martin, of course, he was there, because he's nearly as old as me. Boxhalls. Richard wasn't there, not his brother and sister, they were there. Elliot's, Bennett, Carol Bennett. Well, the Elliot's, there was Christine Ross and Margaret Radford's. They used to be up on the property where John Martin is now, up Debbets Lane.
What are their names?
Radford, Arthur and David. I think Heather, I think that was the girl's name. I think she was there too, and she wasn't very, she would have been only quite young. And Mum told us that that when David went to school, he went home in a state, first day after him. There's another David there. Ian Callaghan, of course, he was there. He came from Jasper's Brush. Wiley's, Margaret and Judy Wiley, they're at Wiley's Creek. And then John and Sylvia, they were another Wiley family. And then there was Gay and Jill, they just lived with their grandparents some of the time. They were only there some of the time. Davis, Bob and Evan and Laurel Davis, and Driskies. They were only there for a few years. Their father used to rent a farm, the one that Walshers had got there in Turner's Lane. They used to rent that. Turner's, Helen Turner.
Who was her father?
Helen.
Who was Turner's Lane named after?
Well, he was Les Turner, and I don't know, it must have been him, because I don't know who else was down there. When Dad and Joe built the house down there for Billy Abernethy. They're an old Campbell Warren Maru families.
Any of them still around?
There's still Abernethys in Nowra. Yeah, they're Billy Abernethy's descendants. Billy Abernethy had four sons. Christy Abernethy had four daughters. When we were at Maru, we used to compete in these school sports. I was a pretty good runner and long jumper and all that sort of stuff. And so was my sister. But we can't run at all now, so we were the only ones that could run. And that Helen Turner, she was real competitive too.
Thinking about the milk runs, where were your cans collected and who collected the cans?
Well, I think originally the farmers used to take them themselves. I think Bert Muller, that's Albert's father, I'm sure he was the first one that had the milk run. He had it during the war, and I'm sure he was the first one that was doing it. And then...
So that would have been Horse and Sulky?
No, he had a truck. He had an old Dodge truck that he used to do it with, and Albert used to do it sometimes. And they had it till sometime in the late 40s.
Where were they delivering the milk?
They used to take it down to the Nowra Co-op in Bomaderry, where Truck and Tractor are now. I think that's where it would have been going then. There was a co-op. They started off on the other side of the river, but I think that's where it would have been then.
And that would have gone by train then?
Then train to Sydney. The milk train used to go up about 11 o'clock every day. From where we lived, you could see it go along the Puffin, and it's an old steam train. And
do you know how much milk went every day?
No, I think Nowra Co-op and Berry Co-op were a bit of friendly rivalry, I think.
As a young person, what are some of your strong memories in the landscape growing up? What did you really enjoy doing?
Driving around on the tractor.
What sort of tractor was it?
We had a grey Fergie. Or it was a little kerosene one, the grey one. There was a lot of them around.
And tell me about the wheels on them.
Yeah, they had rubber tyres. They come out in the late 40s. Tommy Bloke, Harry Ferguson, invented them. They're only a small tractor, like 23 horsepower or something. But they had a three-point linkage and a hydraulic thing that was better than all the other tractors. None of the other tractors had it. And years later, some of them still didn't have it.
Can you remember how much that might have cost? And who the dealer was?
Morehouse, the machinery man. And that actually made him. He got that dealership for those tractors and the Vanguard cars.
What were the Vanguard cars?
They were a Pommy English car, and they had the same motor as the little tractors.
They were popular in the district?
Yeah, a few people had them. I've still got an old Vanguard ute. We got it second hand. Great old ute it was.
Did you go to Nowra mostly?
Yeah, we did all our shopping in Nowra and Bomaderry. Most of the farm stuff was done with the Nowra Co-op because Dad had shares in the Nowra Co-op, so he supported the produce store. Used to get our groceries off. That was another co-op. Mum used to call it the Go-Cop because it went broke. But one of the guys that worked in it, he set up on his own, George Cochran, and he had used to come around on a bike in the morning and collect your order, and then he'd come back the groceries in the afternoon. Didn't work in Maru because he didn't have enough. There was only us and Boxall that supported him in Maru, but he had a good clientele down in Bowlong, and that was still going in when he gave up in the 70s. But I think he either used to ring them up or they used to ring him up. We used to get our meat off Ratcliffe. There was a butcher's shop near the pub in Bomaderry. You get meat off them. That used to come out on the milk truck. The bread you got from Coley's, that used to come out on the milk truck. We got our butter from the co-op. That'd come out once a week in the milk can.
Not a butter box?
No, you just put it in the... We used to get 3 pound of butter. You used to just put it in the milk can.
Was it wrapped?
It was wrapped up in paper.
What about grog did you drink?
No, I didn't go to the pub. That didn't appeal to me. I used to go and buy a few bottles when I was younger, and then I started to make me sick, so I didn't. I haven't drank for what, 50 years probably. Dad was a non-drinker. He didn't like drink, and I worked it out why he didn't like it. But he told us one day, because I was 17 when he died, but he used to tell us about. He used to go into town with his father twice a year. This was back in the horse and cart days when he was only after he left school, when he was only a teenager.
This would be Nowra?
Yeah, into Nowra. And his father had some business he did in there twice a year, something he had to do, and then down the pub. And he used to go up and see the blacksmith. He'd have to bring him home at night. And I reckon, this is only my thoughts, he had to bring him home when he had a skin full, and that's why he didn't like people drinking. And he had a guy working for him once, and he came home drunk one Saturday night, and Sunday morning he was gone, because he used to live in a little room on the side of the house on the veranda, and sacked him on the Sunday morning, cleared him out. So that's what he thought about drink.
Okay, so you like driving tractors. What were you doing on the tractor, and where were you?
Well, usually helping cut the cow feed. That's after we come to where we are now. It's after we left the share farm.
So you're in Pestle's Lane.
Yeah, we're still in Pestle's Lane.
So tell me how you... Okay, let's talk about that and how you secured the property and how big it is.
Well, I don't know whether I should tell you
part of it. Tell me all of it.
Right, well,
we want the truth.
Well, Dad was trying to buy a property. One his grandfather used to have up in Boxall Lane, and it was for sale, and this is in the early 50s, for £5,000, and the bank manager wouldn't lend him the money. So that was the end of that. And anyway, there was another one come up for sale in Jasper's Brush, and he went to the auction. He bid up to £7,000. The bank manager lent any amount of money for that one, and this is the thing we can't work out. And he lent him any amount of money for it. Anyway, he bid up to £7,000 and bailed out. And the next day, the guy that got it arrived around and wanted to sell it to him, for another £700. And he told him to go away. And I thought, I was thinking about this the other day, and I thought, well, what was he bidding on it for if he didn't want it? Dad was talking to his first wife's brother one day, and he said, and he was telling him, and he says, "That's the best miss you ever had, Oz." So I don't know what was on about that property. And anyway, then Minnie, his sister, she came over one day and said, "Don't worry about looking for a farm. I'm going to leave you this one." This is how trusting he was. He was going to go there because she wanted to stay there in her house, and he was going to build another house and the bales and do everything. And Mum said, "No, you're not. She might, someone can come round," because she was getting on in years, "come round and charm her up or whatever, and she can leave it to anyone she likes, and we've lost everything." So they did a different thing on it then, and he bought, paid a deposit, and then used to just pay her the interest, like rent, like that. That's what she lived on, and but anyway.
So that was the arrangement?
Yeah, that was the arrangement, and then when she died, he would have got it, but she lived longer than what he did, and so it didn't work out quite how it was supposed to, because he had died and he left it to Mum, and then she'd left what was owing to Mum and my sister and me and Irby. We all got a little share out of it. So it didn't sort of work out quite as...
How did your dad pass?
He was... he had these tumours, and he was crook for about... He was really crook, and he it's come on to him fairly sudden. It was in 1962, and... Well, Mum reckoned he wasn't well, and he anyway knocked him down just before Christmas on 62. He went to see the specialist in Wollongong in March 63, and he didn't come back. They shoved him in hospital and operated on him, and anyway, and I'm still cranky about, not real happy about this, because Mum rang the hospital to see how the sister or someone said the operation was a success. So you think he was going to be all right, but she had to ring the doctor up a couple of days later, and he informed us that he only had 6 or 12 months to live. And he went about 12 months. He died in March 64.
Yeah. How did that impact the family?
Well, it impacted me, I know that, because I had to, Mum and me took, we ran the farm from then on. So
you stepped up?
Yeah.
How old were you?
17.
And so you, what high school had you left?
I left high school, Nowra High School, at the end of 61. I was 14.
So you stayed on the farm from 14?
Yeah, much to Mum's disgust, because I passed the intermediate in all subjects. She thought I should have gone on and become some sort of flaming professor or something. Oh, I didn't want to do that. I wanted to learn a trade. But anyway, Dad wanted me on the farm, so I stayed with him. And I'm still there. Well, Mum still, she did the financial part of it, and because the business was in her name. And we sort of shared the cattle breeding part of it. And I carried on farming the same way as what Dad did for years.
You took on your father's learning. What was that? How did you run it then? And what changed?
Well, I started off, he was growing pasture. That was different to what he was doing on the share farm, a bit different. We didn't have the silos, so we just grew crop and made hay, grew saccharine, and we grew corn, and we used to grind the cobs up and feed to the cows, like the grain.
Did you store it?
Yeah, we used to just pull the cobs off and chuck them in the shed, and they were there for 12 months, depending on how good the crop was. And then I grew saccharine and used to cut that in the winter time and throw it out in the paddock. Sort of different to what he did over on the share farm.
Well, but so you're saying he was chaffing up there and...
On the share farm he was chaffing, but when we got where we are now, he didn't do that. He just said, just grow the saccharine, plant it thick, says it only had little thin stalks, and then we'd just chuck it out in the paddock. And that's the way he was doing it. And I kept doing that for about 5 or 6 years. And then I made silage in a pit, dug a big trench in the ground, I grew corn and did that, did it different. And then I give that away.
How'd you cover it? With dirt?
Yeah, with dirt. I give that away and I made hay and I just grew pasture. And I worked out how to do things, like they used to have this solids not fat test, and you always had, most farmers had problems with it in the autumn and the winter. And I worked it out one day. We never had problems in the spring and the summer when we had plenty of grass. So I've got to get that grass growing in the autumn and the winter. And I set about doing that. And that's when I completely changed the farming practice, working that out, when I worked that out.
How did you sustain the grasses in the colder weather?
I used to put a lot of fertiliser on, and I started doing it early in the year, like around this time, the end of January, February. And it's a bit of an art. You put it on and you get the grass going and you keep the summer growing grasses off, like the paspalum, because that's what we had then, that was the summer, and you'd keep the rye grass and that'd come up and that was the art in it, keeping.
How would you keep the paspalum out?
You just keep chopping the top off it, keeping it down. And
what fertiliser are you using?
I use different mixtures, proprietary mixtures, and then I was talking to an old guy, farmer, and he says, we use, there was this super potash mix, K13 they used to call it. We use, make up a mixture, a 2-to-1 mixture, 2 bags of that to 1 bag of nitrum. That was a nitrogenous fertiliser. The other, the pasture 13, that was super and potash. And he said, we make up a mixture. Oh, I'll try that. That was cheaper than the proprietary mixes.
Who was that gave you that advice?
Horry Blissett.
Where were they?
Well, they used to farm out in Berry. Then they were in Maroo, and they're up in he went up to Albion Park. His son's still up there, actually, Horry's. But when he told me, he was pally with the guy that owned the Joe Pestle, that eventually bought Joe Pestle's property. And that's where when I found out, I just happened to be talking to him one day and he told me that. So I don't know whether he was living in Maroo then or not. Come back, he was there for a while and then he, I don't know where he went, he sold out. But anyway, they used to farm up in Albion Park.
So just getting back to that, so tell me how that was working with what were you growing?
Pasture, ryegrass, clover and stuff.
Was it improving? Did you notice any difference?
Yeah, because I used to top dress every time I fed used to strip graze the paddocks and I fenced the farm. Well, I hadn't altered at all, but I altered to what Dad was doing and fenced it different. Had some of it done, and I had small paddocks, and they only lasted 2 or 3 days. I'd eat them out in 2 or 3 days, and I would slash them and top dress them every time I fed them off, which was every about a month or 6 weeks, and that was from January till about August, September. I didn't do it over the summer because they didn't need it then. They had enough and they'd...
And how was the milk production?
Well, I got it going pretty good. By the time I got all that working good, and the other thing I did, they used to we got rid of the bulls and we used to use the AI. We had a mixed herd early in the piece, and we used to whatever say it was an AIS or a crossbred cow. Or, yeah, that one looks like it's got a fair bit of AIS in it. We'd use a red bull on her. That one, it looks like it's got a bit of Jersey, a fair bit of Jersey. We'd use a Jersey, and that's what we're doing. And the Friesians, all the different ones. And
so you're breeding with the breed?
Yeah, staying with that breed.
So Illawarras, you're breeding, you're keeping the breed, you're keeping the Jerseys.
Yeah, and the ones that we thought were the crossbred ones, well they look like, say, the Friesian or whatever's a bit dominant in them, we'll stay with that, put that over. Anyway.
What was the methodology behind that? What was your thinking?
we'll say we have a crossbred cows, we could do it. And anyway, but any cows I bought, I always bought Friesians later on. Before that, I used to, if I bought any, I'd buy red ones, or usually red ones or Friesians, but I went to the Friesians, and I eventually ended up with a Friesian herd. And another little interesting thing, I bought two registered cows, and they come from out of Cole Bowley's herd. They come out of there, but that's not where I bought them from.
Over Berry, or?
Yeah, in Berry, just up here in Rawlings Road. And that's where he bred them, but I didn't buy them off him. I bought them at another sale. And I didn't go there to buy them. I was just at the sale and I just bought them. And they were cows that come from that Lamons, the original bred down from them, from those Lamons.
The ones I just showed you?
Yeah, from them Lamons in number.
Wow.
It come to the original stock from them, their ancestors.
So you knew about that history a bit?
No, I just bought them. I was just there and I just bought them.
You saw the composition of them, you like the look of them?
Yeah, and I just bought them. I don't know why, I just still don't know why I bought them.
Instinct?
Yeah, and I bought them. They're only $200 each.
Yeah. Is that a good price?
Yeah, it was cheap then at the time.
Where are you buying them?
Well, so those ones were at an auction sale, the bloke was given up.
Where at?
Fox Green, Bill Mitchell, I think. And I bought some other ones, they were only grade cattle, or Pat Barrett, he's a well-known Berry man. He was up at Woodhill. I bought four of his cows. And I bought two off when they used to have a sale yard in Berry. And this is back in the early 70s. And they come from Watamala or Woodhill or somewhere up there in that vicinity. And then we had some of our own Friesians. Then I had these proven bulls. They do a bull-proven scheme. They'd use the bulls over so many things, and I started doing
that. So they followed them, didn't they?
They tested them and their milk and their butter fat and all that, and I started using them. The ones, some of them were fairly expensive and I couldn't afford them, but I started, and this one bull I used him, and the guy that had the AI thing was after they stopped doing it from, well, you were still working out of the centre here, but he had a private business. And I was using this bull all the time, and he says, I think you should use another bull. And then he says, I don't suppose you could have too many of his heifers. And I just kept using him all the time. And until I got those heifers matured, and then I used a different one over them. Ended up with a herd of cows, and I was grass feeding them, and I was getting up near an average of 5 gallons a cow, 4¾ gallons a cow, and this was in the 80s. I was milking about 37, between 37 and 4, 35, say 35 and 40 in that range. I know one day, one stage I was milking 33, and a neighbour come down and he was all pumped up. He had Guernseys and he said, I've got 210 gallons today. And he was all pumped up. I didn't ask him how many he was milking. I said, well, I'm not getting that much. I'm only getting 150. But then I'm only milking 33. And I found out later he used to milk about 70. So I was a long way ahead of him.
Tell me about your dairy. And was it a walk-through? Or?
Yeah, it was a walk-through. We had two bales. We eventually had them doubled up. Had four machines in it eventually. Dad had he had three machines, because when he was over in the share farm, he owned the machines, he brought them with us, and he had three singles, and when we came, we had one double up and one single, and then later on we put another one in, so we had two double ups, and I worked in that until 95, and then we built an eight-a-side herringbone, put in an eight-a-side herringbone.
Did you increase your herd?
Yeah, I went up, I was milking nearly 100 at one stage. But when I was milking 77. And this is, now I'll tell you this, because it's a bit funny. The tanker driver come around. I thought you would have been down these farmers down the flats. Used to have these heifer sales, these stud sales, selling stud heifers. Thought you would have been down there getting some good cows. What are their old things for? I says, they're milking 120 and getting so much. They're only averaging about 4 gallons a cow. I says, I'm only milking 77, and I was getting 400. Actually, one day I got over, I got 420 gallons, and it's, and according to my calculations, it's about 5.5 gallons a cow. And I said, we wonder what them old things for.
How much land were you on there?
On the home property, I've got, it started off with 117 acres when we got it, and later on, after Dad died, Mum was, when she was fixing things up before she was, she took up one house and 5 acres, and her and her sister, my sister's got it now actually, and I got the, had the rest, the other house and the 112 acres. In 1987, I bought another property. It's about 2 kilometres away. It's just round past the Old Maru School on the bend of the highway there. We've got to go down Pestles Lane, Boxwell Lane, and then along the highway.
So it's on the highway?
Yeah, front side of the highway.
And how many acres have you got there?
67.
What are you farming today?
I've got beef cattle now, Angus beef cattle.
When did that transfer happen?
End of 2008.
What was your thinking there?
I couldn't make it pay, paying wages, and I couldn't do the work myself. Like I was nearly 62 then. If I would have been 30, I would have done it because I milked from 64 till 94, 95. I did it on my own all the time. I employed a bloke, put him on, he was an apprentice. And I went out, I wanted to have a go at, I used to do a bit of contract work, but I wanted to do a bit more of that, and that was the idea of employing someone, but it didn't work very good. I didn't make any money out of it, and I was doing too much, and I sort of got sick, and then I wasn't well, and I had to put the guy off because it wouldn't pay, I couldn't make it pay, and the last 4 years I was on my own again. But it was killing me. Anyway, I gave it away and ran the beef cattle in, and I'm still doing it. I've got myself into a pickle now. I've got too many of them.
How many you got now?
I don't know. I've lost count of them.
So are they at both properties?
I've only got a dozen on one property. On the highway property, there's only a dozen there. They wouldn't get fat at home, so I said, well, I'll put them over there and leave them there. I do get fat. I've got about 150 at home, I think.
What are they eating?
Grass, just kaikia, that's...
Is that naturally grown?
Yeah, well, it's taken over the whole farm now. And I've got, it's not just the home property, I've got about another 100 acres of Mark Marshall's place, my cousin's place, up the joints onto the back. I've got 100 acres up there as well, but it's a lot of rubbish in it too.
Is that near Pestles?
That's on the end of Bell's Lane.
Where was the water supply? Town water?
No, we still haven't got town water. On the home place, I have on the highway paddock, but on the original farm, we still haven't got town water. We've got, Dad dug a little dam up in the paddock, and we used to gravitate it down, but it didn't work in the dry weather, so we used to pump the water out of the creek.
What creek's that?
It's a branch of Abernethy's Creek.
And you still have to resort to that today?
No, when he died, we put a pump on. We're still getting it out of the creek, but we had a pressure pump down in the thing. Before that, we used to have to go up with the tractor and pump the water and ground it into a tank and then gravitate it back. But when he was crook, before he died, he got this other pressure pump and put it on down the dairy.
What sort of piping are you using?
Well, the original one was all steel pipe. Well, that bit of it was poly pipe. Later on, in the 1980, I got a big dam dug up in the gully. That was when things were good. It started to go good because I had a good supply of water, and it was dry weather when we did it, but it started to make a bit of water, and we got a storm not long after, and a fair bit of water in it. It was all muddy and everything. But I used to siphon that down into the creek and let it settle out and then pump it out. But when I got that go, I got that all that, and I put water troughs around the paddocks. Really improved because I had a better water supply for the cattle. Before that, they just had to drink out of the creek.
It's tough times.
And then I had and then in the 90s, there's this wet soak up in the top corner, nearly the highest part of the farm. And I was on about it when I was 15 years old, because I said to Dad one day when we were up there, I says, we ought to dig this out. And he says, you can do that when you take over. Well, that was not in 1962 probably, but in 1995 I got a bloke up with an excavator and we dug this big hole up there and that's what I used rather than the other dam because I don't have to pump it. It gravitates down to the dairy and then back up the paddock to the troughs and I don't have to pump it.
How much water?
I don't know how many gallons would be in it. Well, when they talk about swimming pools, it might be nearly as big as a swimming pool. Fair-sized hole, and it's about 12 foot deep.
The beef cattle, what, tell me the process of farming beef and when you send them off to slaughter.
Well, I've got Angus cattle, and I rear them up usually. If everything goes good, they're veeler stage, about 10, 12 months old. And then I just send them to the market.
What do you get for a one cow these days?
Well, I don't know just what the market's like now, but they're...
They go up and down.
Yeah. There a few years ago, we were sending in little 200 kilo things and getting $1,900 for them, $8.50 a kilo. I think I got for the best of them, one lot. And then that's just that all fizzled out and one lot I sent in, another lot that was like them, and the best I got out of them was later on when the market was crook was at $1.66 and there were some other bigger ones in that load, 40 cents a kilo.
Where do you send them to?
Moss Vale mostly.
They come and collect them in a truck, do they?
Yeah, I just bring the carrier up and...
Who's the carrier?
Steve Chittick.
Chittick's?
Yeah.
Local person?
They used to be at Kiama, but he's gone up to Albion Park now. And I sent him over to the sale at Moss Vale, Jim Hindmarsh and Co.
You never married? A few people haven't married. Is it just circumstance or you prefer your own company?
I don't know. Mm. I don't know why.
You probably had a lot of responsibility as well, yeah. And you were working hard. What keeps you going?
Well, I'm still trying to keep the farm in good order. That was part of me thing when I was young, to get it looking really, have it looking really good, and it did look good too. And I used to make things, because that's what I would have liked to have done, something rather than dairy. Some of the things I've made, I've made up trailers and that for use around the farm, and I made it. Tipping body for a truck and stuff and steel shed frame and stuff like that. And then I started milking more cows and I couldn't get time to do it. And
what about your sister? Do you see her much?
And yeah, every day.
Where does your house position from hers?
About 100 yards away. She'll be 80 in August. Well, she comes down and helps me do the cows sometimes.
Do you have a stud name?
When I had the Friesian cattle, I was in the Friesian cattle club for about 2 years. And it was Mundrula stud, but I got out of that.
How did you spell the stud name?
Mundrula. That's the farm name, Mundrula. When I give up dairy, I went through my little book one day where I kept account of all the cows, and those two registered cows, about two-thirds of the herd were descendants of those two cows.
What were their names?
Blossom and Peggy.
It turns out Blossom and Peggy are descendants of the celebrated Friesian stud at Noombah. This podcast was assisted by a local farming family, Turf Co., who have been operating in and supporting the region for the past 40 years. They are the region's largest agricultural employer, and I'm grateful for their part support toward realising and continuing the ongoing production. I'd like to acknowledge the introductory research undertaken by Joy Vost, who has done much research on the Marshalls and sadly passed away at the beginning of this year. Join me in a fortnight for episode 3, Boxall's Lane, featuring Richard Boxall.